You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. So we're checking in with the Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs to find out how her agency is navigating this pandemic. The agency serves more than 345,000 veterans and their families here in Wisconsin. Veterans, this time is for you. What do you want to hear in terms of your situation? What would you like to share with the Veterans Department head? How are you getting by at this time? Are you connected with resources? We're at 800-642-1234. Mary Kohler is Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs. She spent 3 decades serving in the U.S. Navy. Secretary Kohler, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. It's great to be with you today, at least virtually.
Virtually, yes. Yeah. So our state has 3 veterans homes that have nearly 1,000 veterans and their spouses. We've seen long-term care facilities have been vulnerable to the coronavirus. How are your veterans homes taking precautions?
Kate, we are following the guidance of the Centers for Disease Control and our Department of Health Services and ensuring that in addition to our usual prevention measures, we've heightened our efforts to limit any spread of any communicable diseases. So the cleaning and the monitoring are all enhanced. And I'm very pleased to report that we have no COVID-19 positives in our homes. We have had a very cautious staff who, when they have had symptoms that may be related to COVID-19, they have gone to their doctors and been tested, and all have tested negative. We have also had members of residents at our homes who have had symptoms of an illness, gone to the doctor, and again, they have been tested and tested negative. So I'm very pleased to report, because of our efforts, we continue to have no COVID-19 in our 3 homes. I also want to emphasize that by everyone in Wisconsin doing safer at home, our staff are more likely to remain also without having COVID-19. They're safe when they're in their communities, when they go to the grocery store, and then when they return to the homes to serve our veterans and residents at our homes.
How are the veterans' homes equipped with PPE right now? Are there any in short supply of protective equipment?
No, with PPE, we have the supplies that we need. And if we do get a COVID-19 plan, we're prepared for increasing that supply. We have, again, adequate supply of masks and gloves. And we're following all the protocols that ensure that we do have enough PPE.
In recent years, staffing has been an issue at the facilities, specifically at the Veterans Home at King, where we saw the additional nursing positions that needed to be filled. How are you doing with staffing right now?
We're doing very well. Again, we have a staff that serves our nation's veterans, and we're not unlike facilities throughout the entire country with always dealing with a shortage of nursing and particularly CNA staff. So that was a challenge before COVID-19. It is a challenge now. But with the collaboration and leadership at our homes, we're doing okay, and particularly at King. You may be aware that we used to have 4 halls at King that had members in them. We earlier this year reduced that down to 3, and that significantly helped with our staffing. We still have a capacity for over 500 members at King, but by reducing down to 3 halls instead of 4, that helped us maintain our census at King and also enabled us to reduce our overtime of forced overtime of staff.
We're talking with Mary Kohler, who leads the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs. We're discussing the pandemic, the impact on the work and resources available for the state's veterans. With your questions front and center, what questions do you have about veteran benefits? What would you like to share with Secretary Kohler? We're at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Secretary, let's look at low-income support for veterans. Along with Governor Evers, you announced lifting certain requirements for the program that's called Assistance to Needy Veterans Grant. What changes have been made to this program?
Well, we enabled, we reduced the amount of precedence or criteria that had to be achieved. So it's made it more available. It was actually previously not used as much. So since we have reduced the amount of hurdles that were there for that grant, we have had a significant increase in applications for the grant. I also want to emphasize our Veterans Benefits Resource Center online, because we are telemarketing now, but online, reaching out to our Veterans Benefits Resource Center and chatting with our staff to help veterans, whether it's to find or apply for the Aid to Needy Veterans grants or other resources that may be available to veterans. And we also work collaboratively with our county veteran service officers, who are also teleworking now. But again, they're available to help veterans. So I encourage all veterans and their families to call or email our Veterans Benefits Resource Center, have a chat online, and or call their county veteran service officer. This is a critical time to do that. And recently, the Undersecretary for Benefits for the federal VA had a town hall here in Wisconsin, a virtual town hall, and to hear how many spouses and family members were unaware of what's available. So again, I can't emphasize enough the WISVETS.com and our local county veteran service officers.
How difficult is it to get one of these grants? Because the financial hardship has been quick and from out of the blue. And, you know, for many families, they don't have an emergency fund.
Yeah, that's why I definitely recommend going to WISVETS.com and starting that chat and review it with our experts who will be able to assist veterans. And even if a veteran isn't eligible for that particular grant, what else they may be eligible for in assistance.
Let's look at homelessness for a moment here. Last year's data shows that Wisconsin had over 350 homeless veterans. Have you heard from organizations that work with homeless veterans? What are they telling you?
Actually, with our programs, our VORP program, which is our Veterans Outreach and Recovery Program, we have 11 coordinators throughout the state. They are as busy as ever trying to help veterans throughout the state, whether they're homeless or at risk of being homeless. And I can't emphasize enough how important that program is, and was very thankful that it was funded in the state's last budget, and it needs to continue to be funded. And particularly, as you point out, during this most critical time, we need those 11 coordinators in their local communities working with, again, homeless or at-risk homeless veterans. We also have our Veterans Housing and Recovery Program, which is located in Chippewa Falls, Green Bay, and Union Grove.
And we need to pause right there with that program. We have the Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs, Mary Kohler, with us as we look at services amid the pandemic. We'll be back in a minute with Secretary Kohler here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we have the Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs, Mary Kohler, is with us. We're looking at how the COVID-19 pandemic is affecting veterans. Federal Treasury Department officials have set a new Tuesday deadline for veterans with dependents who missed out on a coronavirus stimulus checks earlier this month, and they warn that some of the money could be delayed until next spring if they don't act soon. We'll get details on that. Veterans, are you suffering financially with the economic downturn? Have you received your stimulus check? What questions do you have about veteran benefits? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. And Secretary Mary Kohler stays with us. Secretary, as we were talking there about the Veteran Housing and Recovery Program, this program helps with job training and counseling. It helps with education and rehab. Have you been able to maintain those services of this program during the Safer at Home restrictions?
Yes. Our staff follows all the procedures. Just like at our homes, we are monitoring our staff and our members, checking temperatures, following hand washing and other preventive measures. So to ensure the health of everyone, again, the members that are in the program and the staff.
Is it hard to deliver services through this program when job training may have to be done on site or shoulder to shoulder in person? What about that component and the education component?
We are maintaining the program. Our contractor is Lutheran Social Services. They're very experienced with maintaining the procedures and protocols to ensure the health of the members. And so it does continue. We have this vulnerable population that we need to ensure that we're there for them, and we are, and they have a safe place, and we're ensuring that it stays a safe place.
Earlier this month, the stimulus checks started arriving. We heard that some veterans were not getting those checks. Is your department able to help get veterans connected with their federal benefits like the recent CARES Act stimulus check?
Well, Kate, I really appreciate that you've brought up this topic. It's just another means to get the word out to veterans who have contacted us and veteran service organizations and their county veteran service officers asking that specific question. The challenge has been for those who received Social Security and or veterans benefits and did not file necessarily a income tax filing in the last year or more, and so they were missed. So continuing to let people know that they have until May 5th, or hopefully they do it before May 5th, to get notifications out so that they can get their stimulus check. It's very important that, again, and I encourage the assistance through our Benefits Resource Center and or their county veteran service officer with assistance to ensure that they do get the stimulus check.
Let's look at telemedicine for a moment. The CARES Act allocated some support for veterans. The legislation enables the federal VA to partner with communication companies to provide telemedicine and telehealth right now. What should Wisconsin veterans know about telehealth?
Whether they're members of our homes that actually can use telehealth with physicians outside of our homes, and plus throughout the state working with the federal VA. I have been impressed with our VAs, our USD VAs, Veterans Health Administration, our hospitals at Toma and Milwaukee and Madison, and with their telehealth outreach. Even myself, appointments that I've had, my doctor has literally called me. So the federal VA is working very aggressively with the outreach to veterans so that they can continue to get the care that they need. There's been extensions of prescriptions. So if it was you can only get this prescription for a couple weeks at a time, it's been extended. So I will say the federal VA has been working very aggressively to adapt to this new world that we have due to COVID-19.
Well, let's take a moment to look at veterans' healthcare facilities right now. They're overseen by the federal VA, not your department. What can you share about how the pandemic has affected the operations of those clinics and those medical centers?
Well, I'm actually looking at a webpage right now that the federal VA has, and our VA hospitals here in Wisconsin, the federal VA hospitals here in Wisconsin, again at Tolma, Milwaukee, and Madison, they have had recorded 86 positive cases and have had 6 deaths of veterans. I will again emphasize just how meticulous and thorough and professional that we are blessed with outstanding VA hospitals here in Wisconsin. I would say also that our numbers are significantly lower than in some other states, and I credit Governor Evers and the Safer at Home actions. For the same reason, our homes don't have COVID-19, because staff going in and out, as long as they're not exposed to other people who may have COVID-19, and I would speculate and be pretty confident that's the reason we've had lower numbers at our veterans' hospitals as well.
Talking with Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs Secretary Mary Kohler, taking your questions about veterans benefits and resources at this time at 800-642-1234. Secretary, we heard from David in Madison, called in, couldn't stay with us, but was wondering whether Veterans Court in Madison is operating right now.
Oh, I would need to find that out, but I know that courts have been reduced or not doing it in person, but I will need to find that out. Okay. So I appreciate David's question, and if he did leave any contact information with you,
we'll follow up.
Get back to him. Yes, but that's a very good question, and I need to find that out.
Well, let's look at funeral services. Due to social distancing, your department has had to temporarily discontinue committal ceremonies. Can you share what's going on there?
Yes, both are with the national cemeteries and our memorial cemeteries. We have limited the amount of people who can come. So we still have interments, and those families who would like to have the honors and the memorial services will have them at a later date. We are also planning Memorial Day observances. We are looking for volunteers, and we will schedule times when, again, to ensure social distancing, no more than 10 people at a time, that flags can be placed at the gravesites at our 3 veteran cemeteries. So I just, again, want to emphasize we continue to have burials, but honors and memorial services can be scheduled for a later date.
You mentioned Memorial Day. As Wisconsin's Safer at Home order is set to end right after Memorial Day, typically services are held at each of the state's veteran cemeteries, many in attendance. How might you adjust these honorings?
Well, Kate, we're actually preparing a virtual Memorial Day observance. We will ensure that it is a solemn event, but again, recognizing a very important day where we recognize veterans who have given their lives for our country. We hear from our veteran service organizations just how important this occasion is for them and what can we do. So we're working with our Wisconsin Veterans Museum and WDVA staff to ensure that we prepare a virtual event that recognizes the solemnity and importance of Memorial Day.
Going back to communication for a moment, how are you communicating with the federal VA, and what type of communication is coming down from the federal level?
I participate in phone conferences. I could do one almost every day. There is a VA, whether it's the benefits or the health administration, the federal VA is communicating throughout the week, and there's any number of opportunities to listen in on and receive the latest information from the federal VA. Just this morning, I probably have at least four emails already that are from the federal VA, just keeping us informed on changes that are being made. You mentioned telehealth and PPE access, and procedures change, survey changes at our homes, how we react and prepare for COVID-19. So I can say that the federal VA is communicating very thoroughly.
Secretary Kohler, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Kate.
Mary Kohler is Secretary of the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs. Secretary Mary Kohler leads the agency that serves Wisconsin's over 345,000 veterans and their families. Coming up, coronavirus outbreaks and meat processing plants have forced some to stop operating, but President Trump signed an executive order last night to order plants to stay open. We examine the meat supply chain right after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. President Trump used the Defense Production Act last night to order meat plants to stay open during the pandemic. So meatpacking plants across the country and here in Wisconsin have become hotspots for the virus. JBS USA announced the temporary closure of its meatpacking plant in Green Bay. Health officials, they've traced at least 255 positive cases of COVID-19 among employees at JBS Packerland. So what questions do you have about our state's food supply? Have you been able to get the meat and produce you need? Do you work in the meat processing industry? What is your experience? Is your plant operating? We're at 800-642-1234. Jeff Sindelar is an associate professor of animal and dairy sciences in the College of Agriculture and Life Science at UW-Madison, where he specializes in meat processing, food safety, and meat science. Jeff, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much. It's great to be back with you and look forward to some conversation this morning.
Yeah, we've been watching closely what's been happening at the JBS plant in Brown County that suspended operations earlier this week. And then the president's order last night. How might this all affect the meat supply here in Wisconsin?
Yeah, that's definitely a great question. Certainly, there are effects and impacts that are occurring that are occurring on a daily and even in some cases hourly basis. With some of the recent changes here locally in the state of Wisconsin, with the temporary closure of the plant, the JBS plant up in Green Bay, as well as a response to that, as well as what's occurring across the country with President Trump's signing of that act, there's changes for the worse, probably, and as well as changes from the better to try to mitigate some of these uncertain and very unstable times.
So, let's navigate that. What would the changes for the worse be, first of all?
Yeah, so definitely, right? I mean, I think everybody is becoming clear to many that our food supply is being challenged a little bit, right? We're seeing lots of plant closures, especially in the last couple of weeks, and that number around which kind of hovers around 20, and it kind of goes up and down based on reopenings and new plants that are closing that are trying to get a handle on this pandemic. Those plant closures represent a fairly significant, small yet significant percentage of the meat that's processed and made available to consumers across the country. So that's definitely a concern in that. With reduction of production, there is also reduction of product available to consumer. Unfortunately, that has a trickle-down effect. So right? So we're still producing the animals to supply the people and consumers in Wisconsin as well as the country. And right now, one of the, in my mind, greater concerns is what are we doing with all those animals and how do we help mitigate some of the, you know, situations where we're getting, or the livestock industry, you know, the front part of animal agriculture is getting backed up with all these animals and nowhere to go with them.
All these animals nowhere to go with them. But we saw in March that the meat processing was way up with USDA figures. Do we have enough supply in there right now? Are we saturated for a while?
Yeah, so another great question. I think that we are maybe not saturated, but we have supply. The meat and poultry industry is a fairly nimble industry. It's very sensitive to changes in market, all the way from, you know, the forecasting of crops down to consumer purchasing habits. So whenever there are changes or even speculations of changes in any of those points during the market or in that market, there can be, you know, some ebbs and flows of production and supply and demand and so forth. The U.S. really doesn't have a huge cold storage or frozen storage capacity, and it really has been because we really haven't needed it. And compared to other countries, like such as China, we have a very, very small, you know, really, relatively speaking, a relatively small amount of cold storage capacity. So we operate more on a continuous system of, you know, we have animals in the food chain, we are processing those animals, we're getting them to the consumers either through restaurants, grocery stores, you know, hotels, food system, you know, school systems and so forth. And so that process is just kind of this nice continuous process that just kind of roll, you know, just rolls right along, and it's worked for many, many, many decades.
And so one piece of that process interrupted will affect the entire supply chain.
It can, you know, it definitely doesn't have to, but it definitely can. And because of all those, you know, little bumps or little changes in the supply chain that happen in normal times, right? The system is able to absorb a lot of those. And sometimes consumers might see the effects of some of those bumps. You know, they might see the prices of meat go up a little bit in grocery stores, or they may see it go down in grocery stores. And so those are some of the things that, you know, consumers see, but there's lots of other, you know, changes that are occurring upstream. And so situations like we're existing right now, they're just a little bit of a bigger bump. And so how big that bump is, I don't know if anyone really knows yet, but, you know, things such as Trump's signage of that act last night are our absolute clear direct responses to minimizing that bump, as well as ensuring that the food supply is protected in not only Wisconsin, but of course the U.S.
Talking with UW meat processing expert Jeff Sindelar is here as we examine how plant closures may affect Wisconsin's meat supply. Producers, how are plant closures impacting your operations? Are you considering opening up now after the executive order last night? Are you concerned about the industry going forward? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Anne now, joining us from Heartland. Hi, Anne.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
My question is, since this seems to be not only in Wisconsin, but in the country, that meatpacking plants are having an outbreak amongst the people working there. So my question is, how is this getting there? Is it have something to do with the animals? Are they bringing it in? Is someone, I hope people are investigating that. Thank you.
Thanks, Anne. What do we know about the outbreaks and the infections inside these plants, Jeff?
Yeah, that's a great question that Anne proposes, and ass. So, you know, the CDC is, you know, the go-to resource for this type of information. And of course, they have, you know, lots of really smart scientists, great people, as well as they are connected with, you know, universities, as well as other aspects of the government, so that they have the most accurate data information as possible. We know, let me digress. The CDC strongly believes, well, we know that this is a virus, and CDC strongly believes, as they have adamantly reported, that it spread from person to person, likely through people that are close contact or via respiratory droplets. There hasn't been, to my knowledge, and I haven't seen any comments from CDC that has suggested that food has ever been able to be a transmission source. Essentially saying that you won't get it from the consumption of food, and it's primarily because, as I've understood, the virus, food isn't a good host. So if it gets on the food, that virus isn't able to survive, or survive in a way that it can make someone infected if someone were to consume that food. So, you know, one of the greatest, a significant concern, a large concern that I've been hearing a lot recently has been, well, in these large plants, these large processing plants, such as JBS in Green Bay, if there are all these positives, if there's all these workers that test positive for coronavirus, and they're working with food, will those or have those workers infected the food, which then could, in this case, meat, which then could make it to supermarkets and grocery stores, and then potentially become risk for consumers purchasing those products. And all the information that I've garnered today has been no, and it goes back to the CDC's understanding and conveying of that understanding that food is not a good vehicle, or is not a vehicle for the spread of this disease.
So it's these workers working alongside each other on these production lines, and the virus spreading from one worker to the next.
Yeah, that's correct, and that's been the biggest challenge that a lot of the larger meat processing facilities have been trying to work through is you know, with relatively large, you know, worker populations, how are they able to manage those populations and still get the work done, and this, you know, and this is very is and it should be noted that right, we're seeing this in large establishments, but we shouldn't also forget that there's thousands of small and very small establishments that also are up against some of these same challenges.
Well, let's pause there with Jeff Sindelar, meat specialist with UW Extension. Are you concerned that plant closures could cut meat processing capacity in our country? Join in at 800-642-1234. Bring your questions, your insights. Back in a minute with Jeff Sindelar right here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Some of the country's largest meat processing plants have been forced to halt operations temporarily after thousands of employees across the country have tested positive for COVID-19. Meanwhile, meat, beef, and pork production reached record highs last month. We have Jeff Sindelar helping us understand this. He's an associate professor of animal and dairy sciences at UW-Madison. He stays with us. Let's take another call now. Ray is joining us. And Ray, I understand you're a truck driver. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am. Good morning.
Good morning.
My question is, if President Trump signed this and wants all the employees to go to work, they all have to be quarantined because they have the virus. So how are these companies going to have enough employees to stay open?
How will they be able to stay open on the assembly lines, Jeff Sindelar?
Yeah, Ray, that's a great question, and that's what a lot of the large processing plants have been battling the last several weeks. So the signing of that order by President Trump was very strategic in basically helping everyone understand that we are not going to go into a food crisis, the U.S. So it basically empowered him to use his resources at the federal level, utilizing, tapping into different agencies and providing the resources, or unlocking those resources for these large meat processing plants to use so that they can navigate through this. But many of the plants are challenged with keeping people healthy, right? As well as keeping operations. Because many of these plants are very systematic, right? There are lots of processes. It takes a lot of people, a lot of line worker type of jobs. They need a bare minimum number of people just to open the doors, and that is being strained by some of the, first and foremost, the employees that test positive, as well as whenever there are local, state, or federal governments that are coming in to try to weigh in and try to potentially force something to occur, which sometimes is a negative. So it's the you know it's a real challenge to keep these plants open, and it simply needs people to do that.
Ray, thanks. Let's bring in Becky now, who is joining us from Beloit this morning. Hi, Becky.
Hey, my question is, since the hotels, motels, restaurants haven't been open, is there a real big worry right now because they haven't been ordering the meat? As far as
Yeah.
shortages?
Yeah. Jeff, what do you see there? Because, as we see maybe more consumer demand at home, as people are eating in more, is that offset because the restaurants and the hotels and so forth aren't open?
It absolutely is, and that's one of the pathways that meat establishments, large, medium, and small, are pursuing is shifting their production, which maybe part of it or a lot of it, or even in some cases all of it, was going to the HRI, hotel restaurant industries, and then shifting that to retailers. So, for example, there's a local meat processor right outside Madison here. When the COVID-19 outbreak, occurred, about 70% of their business was HRI, and so they've had to shift that business model to directly marketing and providing those cuts, those products to consumers. So absolutely.
Well, we've heard the rise of, know your local butcher, know your neighborhood, the butcher around the corner. Are we going to see more of that going on where we have more local meat processing, maybe very small operations, and these local butchers connecting directly to consumers?
Yeah, absolutely. We're seeing that already. And I think we'll see more and more of that. Wisconsin is very, very fortunate. We're very rich in terms of not only the amount of meat processing that's occurring in the state. It's one of the largest industrial outputs in the state of Wisconsin, but also the quality of the products and just the craftsmen that are out there producing those. So, we have about 375 small and very small plants in the state of Wisconsin, which is one of the largest numbers in of any state in the country. Those establishments are trying to help alleviate some of the overburden of that's being occurred that's occurring with too many animals and not enough places to go with them. So they're trying to take on extra capacity, and they're also absolutely, to your point, meeting the needs of consumers that are looking for other resources for products when perhaps grocery stores and supermarkets aren't maybe providing that, or maybe becoming into question in the future, being able to provide that.
We're talking with Jeff Sindelar, an associate professor of animal and dairy sciences at UW-Madison, looking at the state of meat processing plants here in Wisconsin and the food supply across the country. With your questions, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Nate now, joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Nate.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I was going to ask, since part of Trump's executive order says that companies will not be held liable for their workers getting sick, how do we know that the company itself will actually do whatever it can to make sure its workers aren't getting sick?
Yeah.
Jeff, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll start out by saying I'm a meat scientist, but it's a really great question. I think that the act provides, and I certainly don't want to speak out of turn because I'm not as well versed in this topic area, this subject area. But the act essentially shifts the liability to the federal government, or shifts a portion of that. In addition to that, meat and poultry processing plants, they have liability regardless. They're liable for the well-being of their employees. They're liable for meeting contracts and processing animals, from farmers and ranchers and producers. They're liable to consumers to provide a safe, wholesome, nutritious food, and do that on a day in, day out basis. So I'm kind of skirting around your question a little bit because I don't know the specifics of what that, what the term liability in that act really, really, truly means. But hopefully I've conveyed that it's a fairly sophisticated and complicated topic.
Well, Jeff, in the last minute or so we have with you, what can we do? How can consumers help this situation? What advice would you give about buying meat right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. Another great question. So consumers are part of the meat industry, right? The meat industry is full of stakeholders. And stakeholders are those that are involved with the meat industry. And those include the people that are raising animals, people that are processing animals, the people that are buying the products. So we all are stakeholders. The best thing, in my opinion, that we can do is stay the course, have trust in the system, and really, really, really try our best to remain calm and try not to evoke any of those bumps that we talked about earlier.
Like, so panic buying is not a good time to do any type of panic buying.
Absolutely. If you want to buy more, stock up a little bit more, try to limit it to maybe a couple of weeks of food, but try not to do that panic buying, because that just exaggerates that bump and it puts additional pressure. And I realize that's very, very hard to do, but there's lots of people, really smart people. There's lots of things that are going on in the background to really try to mitigate and really, really work through this pandemic so that food supply, that meat supply is there and it remains there so that, the Wisconsin consumers don't have to be concerned and can have confidence in that food supply.
Jeff, thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome.
Jeff Sindelar, Associate Professor of Animal and Dairy Sciences in the College of Agriculture and Life Science at UW-Madison. Coming up, it's On Point, looking at contact tracing. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.